Foot with great local programming on Sunrise from the Center on WRCE.
On our morning show from WRCO Radio, we have a couple of guests in here. We were able to pry them away from their busy schedule, and they are busy. Steve Krueger is here. He is joining us to talk a little bit about city utilities. Todd Fisher is here talking from the wastewater aspect here in Richland Center. And gentlemen, it's a kind of a timely topic here, isn't it, Todd?
Yes, it is. It's getting to be construction season, so we're getting ready to get started. So I thought we'd come on the show with you this morning and let people know what's going to happen.
Right. And so, and we're looking, Steve, too, at some construction coming up here. People are probably a little bit, you know, kind of wondering what's going to happen with the upcoming parades and the rodeo and all of those things, too.
Correct. This will be the third phase of the 7th 8th Street project, and this year it impacts heavily 8th Street along the cemetery. So there will be some disruptions and traffic pattern modifications throughout the summer.
Can you talk a little bit about that and where traffic's going to be rerouted to and everything?
Sure. The truck route signs on Highway 14 will be covered to not direct people up 8th Street and along the cemetery out County A or AA towards the fairgrounds. That traffic will all be directed north on 80 and across on Industrial Drive to come back in. And then during the project, either the intersection of 8th and Church or 8th and Park will have temporary closures. One of those intersections is subject to always be open for local traffic in the 9th, 10th, 11th Street neighborhoods, but we would encourage those people to consider going around past the fairgrounds for the summer. It will just ease congestion in the neighborhood.
And with the upcoming parades and things like that, the routes are going to change a little bit, aren't they?
Correct. They've already worked with the Memorial Day Parade, and that is going to start and end in some different locations this year. I know you have had guests on, and we'll be talking with Marge Freeman about that, and they're going to utilize the Veterans Pavilion in Crosscut Park this year instead of the area in the cemetery by the cannon. Also for the rodeo parade, the traffic will be open for that, but it will be in gravel, not blacktop. So it'll be somewhat passable, but there, you know, will be a little bit of disruption to the normal routine there.
So, Steve, when is that? What is the timeline for that as far as start and projected finish and all of that?
Well, our tentative start date was next week Monday, but we've had a fairly wet spring, so the crew that is coming in, G Pro, is a little bit delayed in Mazamani where they're at. We have heard that they're going to mobilize midweek next week, start bringing equipment in and start receiving deliveries. And then after that, they'll start stripping blacktop off and getting to work. They have 120 days for the project, so our substantial completion date is towards the end of August, August 30th, and final completion with landscaping and all the restoration is September 27th. So it'll be a most of the summer project.
Okay. Back by, it'll be open probably fully by the time school starts, or that's a projection anyway then.
It should be passable for that and for the county fair.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Todd, has it been a good last year for everybody at Wastewater?
Yeah, I think everything's gone really smooth over there as far as how things are going personnel-wise and how the operation at the wastewater plant is going. And, of course, as Steve said, this is the third phase. So our project last year was, I guess it was the expensive part for us for the wastewater because we were up on the hillside coming around Cedar Street from 7th to 8th. A lot of rock, deep excavation, so a much more costly phase for the wastewater. This one's a little bit less, so the cost should be down for the wastewater residents that way or wastewater customers. But as far as the city goes, we're just getting into our collection system maintenance right now. So when the weather turns nice and we can get the jet machine out there and we're starting to clean those sewers, we try to get a 3-year rotation to get through everything in town. But like always, coming out of the wintertime, you have usually it's tree roots are the problem. But so far this year, We've had four significant backups that are causing problems to our residents, you know, with sewage actually backing up into the basements, and all four of them have been attributed to balls or gobs of disinfecting wipes, whether they're Swiffer wipes or Clorox disinfecting wipes. I guess I just want to remind folks that just because they go to the store and on the front of that label it says flushable, there's a lot of things that are flushable that can go down the toilet when you flush, but they are not treatable. And again, if you look at the heavy weave of that cloth and how that is put together, that does not disintegrate the way toilet paper or things that should go down the sewer. And once it's out there in the main, it can get hung up on anything, and it only takes one little obstruction to get that caught, and then everything's going to get caught on that, and it's just going to keep building and building. So, again, just a real big reminder for people, try to keep that stuff out of the sewer, put it in the garbage, you know, get rid of it that way. It just doesn't belong in the sewer. And even if you're out in the, you know, rural area where you have your own private holding tank, private septic system, again, that stuff's got to get backed out and taken somewhere. Well, it's getting taken to our treatment plant. So again, it still can have a problem at the treatment plant, even though we do have screening devices and that to take it out.
It's amazing something so simple could cause so many major problems.
Yeah, and I remember, you know, 20 years ago, it was a really big thing that these are, you know, they'd even put right on there, septic system safe. You know, well, again, I look at a piece of cloth, and again, paper, even like our desktop paper, that'll break down in water over time and much faster, but these weaves that they're putting into these cloths and towels that are supposed to be disinfecting countertops, your hands, be able to kitchen wipe, those are some pretty sturdy, heavy-duty cloth towels. I don't know how long it would take to actually break down just sitting in a tank, you know, so... Again, just a reminder, please don't put that down the sewer. It just causes a lot of problems for not necessarily you, but you're definitely going to affect your neighbors, yeah. You know, if that happens. And it did happen again four times, and it's in all four different neighborhoods. It's not all the same place. So, again, it's happening throughout the city. So we would just ask that you'd continue putting a good effort into not putting that down the drain.
Yeah, good reminder there. So with your work, is it right now kind of a tough part of the city to be working on, or is one tougher than the other?
No, the older part of town is always a little bit different for the sewers because there are a lot of clay tiles still left in the ground, and sometimes you get a little more tree roots and some of that. But we've done, I've been here 22 years now, and we've done a street project just about every year I've been here. So we're getting a lot of that older collection system pipe out of the ground. So we're getting new PVC in the ground. We're getting things a lot more sound in our system as far as infiltration and inflow, rainwater, groundwater being able to seep into our system. So it makes the maintenance part of it go much better. And again, I think the West Side Drive project is an example of that. It was a big project, but it got a lot of old pipe out of the ground up on the hillside right along the river. And again, we used to get a lot of sand over there collecting in our lift stations and in our pipes. That's all gone now. So again, we've done a good job, and our, you know, commission has really backed us on making sure we continue to strive to get that stuff done on an annual basis. So it's a little at a time rather than waiting to do a 17 block project like we did on Main Street, you know, years ago. It needed to be done, but man, that was a big project.
I bet. So. You had some public information meetings too, didn't you, recently?
Yeah, we had a public information meeting about the project back in April 23rd, I think it was, and we had good attendance from the public in the area. And as I said to the commission on Wednesday night at our meeting, you know, I think the big thing is doing, I guess, more visible projects like the Hazeltine Seminary, getting the first two phases of this done. There's not real negative impact to the community at all. It's all positive, but they're just not sure how it's going to affect them. Well, now they've been able to see those projects, what the outcome is. It's a summer where you have a little bit of harder time getting your vehicle to your driveway, but once it's done, it's so much nicer that you've got all this to look forward to. It's kind of three months of inconvenience to really have a drastic improvement around your house and in your property.
We wanted to talk to Steve as well about some of the things that have come up recently in the news. PFAS are always in the news. How does that look for Richland Center residents?
Well, it looks really good, Phil. Last April and last October, so we had a six-month separation. We did two rounds of testing from all three municipal wells, and we have zero detects of PFAS in our community. Really good news. I can attribute that to a couple things. One is our industries, the dairy industries, our food grade type industry. We're not using those chemicals that create the PFAS compounds in the environment. And we're not near an airport where the firefighting foam that had been used in the past and used in large quantities for training had the PFAS compounds in them. So we will have ongoing continual testing as required by the DNR in the future, but at this time we have zero detects.
Okay, so the water is treated. Is that how it works before the test is made, or how do you do that?
Well, those tests were a raw groundwater test, so the wells were turned on after a couple hour rest period. We manually ran each well individually and took a sample. Had a lot of safety precautions in that. There were certain types of clothing that I could not wear while I was doing that. Could not have my hands exposed. I had to have a glove that they sent with the test kit that was put on just to make sure that you're eliminating any potential contamination sources. Our wells are 450 feet deep, so we're taking water deep from the aquifer here in the community. And like I say, we have zero detects in our community.
That's great. So you're getting into homes then? Are you doing some of those checks right now too and updating systems?
Correct. So along with our lead and copper rule monitoring, the DNR has us doing a study on what customer side service laterals are coming into your house below the meter. And we have gotten about halfway through the community. We've been looking at that while we've done our routine meter changes, but we have about 1,100 houses that we need to identify what type of pipe material is coming through the floor below the meter, whether it be copper, lead, or galvanized. In the future, there is funding tied to this, so if you have a lead pipe or if you have galvanized that was previously lead on the utility side that we have replaced in the past, we may be able to help you with funding to replace your side of the water service lateral. So it's important that we identify all these, and we need to have that done by late summer. There's reporting to the DNR that is due mid-October for this.
How do you tell, again, whether yours has been updated or not?
Well, if you just call us, we can, if you're unsure of the pipe type there, call us and we can certainly come out and take a look for you and identify. Copper is a shiny substance, just looks like a penny. Galvanized and lead are a little bit different than the copper. Their color is similar. They're both silver, but a magnet will stick to galvanized where it will not to lead.
So, what number should they call if they're interested?
Well, if they'd like to reach out to us at the water shop, 647-4226, myself or one of the staff, Travis Walters or Terry Thielman, can certainly stop by and we can help identify that for you.
Summer is coming up. I'm guessing there's a little bit higher usage during the summer then?
Correct. We pump about 1 million gallons a day in the community. We are a heavy dairy industry, so our three dairy plants, Alcam and the two Schreibers, are very good customers of ours. Foremost Farms has their own private well, so they're not an everyday user of the utility, but they contribute to a significant amount of our load. We're pretty consistent year-round because of the dairy use. We don't see large spikes in the summer because the industrial load is so heavy for the community.
Okay. I don't think we had too many reminders on this winter about water main breaks, did we?
No, I did not get to talk to you quite so often this winter, Phil, and that's actually
a good thing.
That's a good thing. When I first started with the utility over 20 years ago, it was not uncommon to have 12 to 15 water main breaks a winter. And this last winter, we only had two breaks and one service lateral break. So it was a relatively easy winter, something, I guess, to be said for global warming. Talking about breaks, that is one of the driving factors on street projects, as Todd alluded to, roots. The infrastructure is a lot of what determines what streets will be replaced in town. So this year on phase three of the street project, we'll be eliminating 7 repair clamps that have been from breaks in the past. Phase one on 7th Street replaced 8. And last year, there were actually 22 repair clamps taken out of the ground. So those sections of pipe had seen come to the end of their useful life, and glad to have those out of the ground.
I'm sure. What's the lifespan typically on a repair clamp like that, you know?
Well, a repair clamp is intended as a temporary repair, but a lot of times they're in the ground for 15 or 20 years before you actually get to replacing the main.
Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing to get rid of them then, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Todd, some other things that you wanted to talk about today.
Yeah, first thing is we're in the middle of our permit renewal cycle. It's a 5-year permit for our discharge permit to the Pine River. And what Steve had alluded to with the PFAS on his end, we needed that testing to get done on the source water to the wastewater plant. And then we will have new PFAS requirements for us to test both our biosolids, or the fertilizer that goes to the farm fields, as well as the river, water going out, the effluent going out to the river. So we'll have some new testing requirements, some new things. So just so the public is well aware that the PFAS is, it's affecting all the utilities, especially water and wastewater. But I don't foresee any problem. Again, as Steve alluded to, our industries are pretty much food grade. They're meeting FDA, you know, food and drug requirements, all that kind of thing. So we don't expect that there's going to be some type of an addition into what he's had a no detect on, that somehow through the process of going through these factories and facilities that we're going to get a big, large spike. The other thing I wanted to touch on was Wednesday night at our commission meeting, there was a rate increase approved. Our last rate increase was 10 years ago, just before we built the new wastewater plant out in Twin Bluffs. I know it's not the best time. It never is a good time to have rate increases. People don't like it. People don't care for it. But a prime example of why it was necessary is our old rate 10 years ago was built on $150,000 a year going towards street reconstruction projects. As I had mentioned, last year was one of our most expensive years for the street reconstruction project, and our share of that was $530,000. So again, we're only getting rates and revenue for $150,000, yet we're paying $530,000. That math doesn't work for very long, which is why we were starting to run into a shortfall in the wastewater utility over the last couple years. So this needed to be looked at. We had our engineering firm do a complete study, looked at everything, and this is what they came up with. So I guess just a heads up to the community, it's going into effect July 1st. So you won't see it until you get your bill in August based on the July usage. And an average residential customer is going to see about a $13 to $14 per month increase, about $160 to $165 over the year. So again, it's real money. I'm not saying that it's not, but again, it's something that we have to do in order to keep up. Cost of inflation, cost of material, cost of labor, cost of everything has just went up drastically. If we look back to what 10 years ago was when this rate was put in, or the current rate was put in, to have this new rate is, I'm surprised it's not more at some aspects, but
you're getting a lot, though, in terms of, you know, you mentioned the upgrades and things like that.
We've got a completely, you know, new treatment plant that's already 9 years old, which is hard to believe that it's been that long. But we started out there in November of 2015. So it's new, but nothing lives forever. So even those mechanical systems, those pumps, that equipment, you know, they're starting to live their life already, where you get to 12, 15 years, a lot of that stuff is going to have to be completely replaced. Well, there's maintenance costs on it the more you use it. Some of this equipment is running 24/7. You know, it's never not working. So again, thinking the wear and tear on that, we just got to have the revenue in order to make sure we can keep things running as smooth as they are.
Are there grants involved and things like that for upgrades if you're going to maybe do some new things with equipment or not?
No, there's not so much grants out there anymore. Once we financed it and we got our large grant through USDA when we built the plant and built the process out there, what we do have is an equipment replacement fund. So part of our rate and part of our rate structure has a stockpile of money to take care of that mechanical equipment to make sure we can rebuild, replace pumps, equipment, that kind of thing. It's the stuff like roofs. You know, shingled roofs are not going to last forever. The structural integrity of some of the buildings, some of the other stuff, tankage, if some of that starts to go, that's not going to make it, and that's not part of the equipment replacement fund. So, again, it's mostly that mechanical equipment. We kind of have a built-in savings account in our financial working to make sure. So, again, this is also to keep that whole, as well as our bond and interest payments to USDA from that.
What about, are there grants as far as your lead replacement, the water service lead grant there, Steve?
Yes, there are. And actually at commission meeting last night, we authorized the first step to applying for that grant. Our engineering company, MSA, will be applying for money to help the customer side where they either do have lead or have galvanized that was previously downstream of lead. Mm-hmm. That is going to be a 50% coverage for the homeowner. The homeowner would have to pay the other 50%. But galvanized pipe that's been in the ground for 50 years is not very long for its life anymore and is nearing the end of its useful life. So this will be able to help some customers in our community. That's part of why identifying those service types are so important to us that we need to do by this October, because that will identify the customers that will be eligible for this funding. And we're looking at this for 2025 construction.
Do you give them a reminder, or how do they know that they're eligible?
So based off the service surveys that we are doing this October, after I report to the DNR, there's a 30-day window where I have to notify all customers that have lead or copper services, and then we'll give them educational materials with that on if they're concerned about lead in the water, or educational materials about the future loan program.
It's a busy next 6 months or so for all of you, isn't it?
Yes.
It's always busy for us, yep.
Getting stuff done, no doubt about it. One other thing about PFAS, you know, they've been in the news a lot lately, Todd, and I think where you're spreading, too, sometimes people might be concerned about what's going on in my field. You know, you've been hearing some things about that lately, but it sounds
correct.
Like...
There's other places in the state that have really... We've actually had farmers say they won't take the biosolids coming out of their wastewater treatment plant in other locales in Wisconsin, because they said until you can prove that it's not there, that they're, whoever they're selling their milk to, the cow's eating that crop, they got to have this chain of evidence that PFAS doesn't exist. That was all brand new information to the DNR, because we just heard about this about a week ago, and some of our lawyers through an association we're in called MEG, Municipal Environmental Group, they're going to be contacting DNR staff, and they weren't aware of it. So again, that's not the way this should be working. I don't think anybody that's been testing biosolids so far, from what I was told here just a week ago, there's like two places in the state that are even measuring any PFAS in their biosolids. And it's still at such a low, low, low level that there's really no treatment for it, and it is evident there. But when you look at places like Marinette and some of these that have extreme water problems, to not have anything in the biosolids at their treatment plant is something's going right, but it's also got to be ending up somewhere, which we think is it's ending up in the groundwater around those facilities where they're using it, or the firefighting foam around Truex Field in Madison and those kinds of things. So it's not really getting into the wastewater. Again, in other places, other states, we, again, haven't heard that there's a lot that's proven to be in the sewage, but there are probably isolated cases. So, again, the testing requirements are going to be to prove that it's not there. As of right now, we don't believe that there would be any reason to think we've got it there. Our water is a no detect, and, again, our industries are already regulated against using that kind of product and food-grade material.
Pretty stringent testing for everybody, isn't it?
Oh, it's real stringent. Like I said, you're talking micrograms per liter instead of the parts per million or parts, you know, this is so low level. There's only a few labs around that can even test for it that low.
What do you do at the old location, the old wastewater treatment plant here in Richland Center?
Well, the old treatment plant downtown here, we had built a new building, and it kind of has the same color code as the buildings out at the new plant, which has kind of got that maroon trim on the block building, and now it's probably mostly invisible or invisible because it's hid behind the new shed that was built for the parks and the city departments there. But that building is the main lift station, and that geodesic dome that used to be the sludge storage for us at that plant when it was operating as the treatment plant is now basically just an overflow buffer in case we have a really wet weather event, sewer breaks, something like that, where we're getting a lot of flood water in or anything, that can offload 1 million gallons of the flow over there. That way we're able to keep our pipe going out to the new plant smaller. At the old building, it's basically a garage. Again, it didn't make a lot of sense to move 7 miles away from that location and take the jet machine, the back trailer, the camera van, all of this equipment out there when it's still here is where the collection system is downtown. So that equipment is housed in that older building. I have a couple guys that this time of the year, again, they're starting to do that collection system maintenance. So we're manning that facility, I guess, on a regular basis with the collection system maintenance. Other than that, we've got some semis that are actually hauling waste in. One of them we've had hauling in for about 11 or 12 years, I think, now from Sunset Orchard. So they come pull in through the gate down below and dispose of that waste right there at the lift station. And then that main lift station pumps it out of town. So, again, it's used. And definitely the RV dump station is used.
Oh, I bet. I see people there all the time.
Yeah, I think there was 12 or 13 RVs dumped just on Sunday this weekend. So, again, as soon as the weather turned nice and everybody's out and about, but even in the middle of winter, it seemed like we have every sporadically now and then we still have somebody that's dumping their RV or camper. So, again, I think it's a great facility down there. We were able to redo the parking lot, the blacktop, to get RVs in and out of there. Of course, the beautiful Arboretum is right there below. It's just amazing to watch how many people are using that to walk, run, jog, exercise, dump their RVs. Again, it's just nice to keep the place looking nice down there. Even though it used to be a treatment plant.
Mm-hmm, right. So. Nice to know what those buildings are used for, though, because we drive by there all the time. So
yep.
Thanks for explaining
yep.
that. Anything else you'd like to add, Steve, this morning?
Well, I think just bear with us. Construction is always a little bit of an inconvenience for everybody. But as you drive around town, like Todd mentioned earlier, the finished product is well worth it. There will be storm drain put in with this project. The large transverse drains at 8th Street are being eliminated, and curb drains will be put in the full length of the project. So we're going to catch that water that's traveling the full length of 8th Street at the top of the hill instead of it traveling on top of the road. So that'll be good. Even in the spring with the snow runoffs, we'll notice that improvement. A little dust, a little noise, but the end product will be definitely something you'll be happy with.
Todd Fisher and Steve Kruger joining us in here. Some good information for the city of Richland Center. We'll have more coming up on The Morning Show.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
This is Lynette from the Prescription Center. We want to thank all of our longtime friends who have put their trust in us to manage their family's health. We want to thank our increasing number of new friends who have learned just how special we treat our friends. We do realize you can go anywhere or use mail order. We want you to choose us every day. We know copays are the same for any pharmacy in town. However, we feel we provide a superior value for your dollars. If you find our prices higher, we will match prices for all medications. We check to see if any of your prescriptions have dollar off coupons from the manufacturer. These coupons actually put money back in your pocket. If your current pharmacy does not do this, give us a call. We know your time is valuable. When you call ahead, your prescriptions are ready when you stop. I guarantee you will never wait in our drive-thru. Okay, we do not have a drive-thru. The Family Prescription Center, where you and your family always come first.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Boarding House Antiques in Richland Center, where you can treasure hunt in 17 rooms of antiques and gifts. There's live music at the Garden Stage every second Friday of the month, June through September. Tammy and Margie invite you to visit Tuesday through Saturday. Check out the historic Boarding House Antiques. Check them out on Facebook and their webpage. They buy antiques. 339 West Seminary Street in Richland Center, next to the depot.
Many people aren't aware that Richland County has an organization similar to Big Brothers Big Sisters. For 35 years, Kinship of Richland County has made hundreds of matches between carefully screened adults and local children who need some extra attention. I'm Michelle Nolan-Karras, the director of Kinship. Occasionally, relationships don't work out, but it's amazing how often they do. Having a mentor can improve a child's self-confidence and help them succeed at school and in life. The mentor benefits from these matches, too. Often they last for years and continue into adulthood. If you would like to become a volunteer or refer a child, please contact us at 608-475-2886 or email us at kinshiprc@gmail.com. Donations to Kinship can be mailed to P.O. Box 51, Richland Center, Wisconsin. Your gift is tax deductible and much appreciated.
Always made fresh root beer, always at A&W. Your A&W restaurant is located on Highway 61 in Boscobel. Stop by soon and enjoy.
At participating restaurants, prices may vary, tax extra.
Cars have airbags, backup cameras, and blind spot sensors, and your auto insurance can be just as protective. This starts with your agent. Based on an understanding of your unique situation, your agent can help you determine which coverage options are best for you with a policy that covers what you need and nothing you don't. Personal service every mile of the way with your agent is as close as a call or email. Like a good neighbor, Julie Karen State Farm is there.
WRCO 100.9 FM, Richland Center.
News Time at 6:30 is sponsored by Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy, your full-service pharmacies caring for you and about you, and by BL Signs. Today's high temperature will be at around 73. There's a 40% chance of rain showers today. An air quality alert until 10 this morning for Vernon, Crawford, and Richland counties. So far on the day, a nice morning. We're at 58 degrees, up one from the overnight low.
BL Signs is a full-service sign design company in Richland Center. They specialize in manufacturing all types of interior and exterior signage for all applications to meet the client's needs. They offer internally lighted extruded aluminum sign cabinets, post and panel signs, non-lighted acrylic letters, LED lighted channel letters of all types and sizes, printed in solid color vinyl lettering, and graphics. Call BL Signs at 647-0149 and see what they can do for you. BL Signs, Richland Center.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I am Phil Nee. Here is what you need to know. A silent war protest this weekend at UW-Madison commencement. Several people believed to be graduating students wearing their caps and gowns walked through the back of Camp Randall Stadium on Saturday carrying the Palestinian flag. The protest comes after a larger anti-war protest encampment was taken down Friday ahead of graduation. The group was guided out by security but did leave on their own. No arrests were made. An absentee ballot witness lawsuit is dismissed. Friday, U.S. District Judge James Peterson rejected a suit by a Democratic law firm on behalf of four voters. The suit filed against the Wisconsin Elections Commission sought to overturn the requirement that a witness certify ballots filled out by absentee voters in Wisconsin. The suit argued the requirements are burdensome and violate the federal Voting Rights and Civil Rights Acts. In rejecting the arguments, Peterson wrote they represent attempts to apply federal voting rights law beyond its proper scope. The president of Microsoft has a personal connection to its new AI campus in Racine County. At last week's groundbreaking in Mount Pleasant, Brad Smith noted he spent part of his childhood nearby, and he promised the project will benefit the entire state. Smith said the new campus, located on some land originally set aside for the underperforming Foxconn project, is about using the power of AI to fuel the future of manufacturing companies and jobs and skills across the state of Wisconsin and around the country. He also made a commitment to the Racine area. Smith said partnering with Gateway Technical College will train more than 1,000 people to fill jobs at the new facility. He also said they'll train 100,000 people by the end of the decade. Organized baseball and softball require umpires after a dip in the count of umps during the pandemic. The director of training for the Wisconsin Umpires Association, David Farou, says those numbers are rebounding, but he says help is always needed, especially with the explosion of youth sports, club sports, and traveling teams. Farou also stresses the need for younger people to join the umpiring field as the current count of umpires is aging. Farou says association exists to help train new umpires. There's more information about the group at wuaumpires.com. There's a part for everyone in the Community Players upcoming production of The Music Man. There is something for everyone for all ages, either on stage or behind the scenes. Andrew Sharp is the director of the production.
It's a good show. It's a fun show. I'm hoping it'll be a popular show that a lot of people will come to see, but we're hoping that a lot of people will come to audition. And that's really the bedrock of any show. I mean, it's axiomatic, I guess. It's obvious. If you've got good people, you've got a good show. And so we're hoping to get people to come out. We need lots of people because the Music Man comes to River City, Iowa, and he meets the entire town, basically. But we need to put the entire town on stage, and that's young people, old people, men, women, children, girls, boys. So we need a lot of people and not real demanding parts. You don't have to be a lead. You don't have to sing a lead part, and you can come and sing in the chorus.
Auditions for The Music Man will be held at the Richland Center City Auditorium Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week at 6:30 p.m. No experience is needed to try out for the show.
We love seeing new people, and we will give them big parts. Troy Miller from Spring Green showed up for Elf and ended up with his daughter. His daughter was trying out, and he figured, oh, what the heck? Ended up as the father in the show with no experience at all, so it can happen.
Players are also needed for the live orchestra that will accompany the show. The Music Man will be held July 26th, 27th, and 28th, August 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, and put on by the performances for the Community Players of Southwest Wisconsin. Flushable doesn't always mean flushable. Richland Center Wastewater Superintendent Todd Fisher is asking residents to be mindful of what they flush down the toilet.
Coming out of the winter time, you have, usually it's tree roots are the problem, but so far this year, we've had four significant backups that are causing problems to our residents, you know, with sewage actually backing up into the basements, and all four of them have been attributed to balls or gobs of disinfecting wipes, whether they're Swiffer wipes or Clorox disinfecting wipes. I guess I just want to remind folks that just because they go to the store and on the front of that label it says flushable, there's a lot of things that are flushable that can go down the toilet when you flush, but they are not treatable. And again, if you look at the heavy weave of that cloth and how that is put together, that does not disintegrate the way toilet paper or things that should go down the sewer. And once it's out there in the main, it can get hung up on anything, and it only takes one little obstruction to get that caught. And then everything's going to get caught on that, and it's just going to keep building and building.
The backups have been happening throughout the city. Fisher urges everyone to place wipes in the garbage and not the sewer system. Join Gunderson Boscobel Area Hospital and Clinics for the Healthy Hustle, a 1 mile and 5K walk run coming up Tuesday night as a part of Healthcare Week. The stroller-friendly course will begin at the Gunderson Boscobel Area Hospital Bluff Street Terrace and bring participants down the Sanders Creek Path and back. Same-day registration begins at 5:30. The race kicks off at 6. The Healthy Hustle offers a laid-back race experience with no frills, unofficial timing, and fun end of race awards, perfect for the whole family, including pets. There will also be health and wellness offerings and concessions available on the Bluff Street Terrace coming up tomorrow at Boscobel Area Hospital and Clinics.
Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy are working hard to give you great service. The pharmacists and staff want you to feel good and to feel good about your pharmacy. You can trust Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy, where local people who know and care about you are always willing to take the time to answer your questions. Experience the difference, safety, and convenience at Boscobel Pharmacy and the Center Pharmacy on Orange Street in Richland Center.
The forecast calls for a high of 73 today, a 40% chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms, which could be more numerous south and east of Richland County. A small chance of light showers tonight, a low of 46, and tomorrow near 70. For Wednesday, 72, with a 50% chance of nighttime showers. There is an air quality alert with the wildfire smoke, which again, looks like it's going to be a factor this year as it was last year. Air quality alert until 10 a.m. this morning for Vernon, Crawford, and Richland counties. Yesterday, a nice one for Mother's Day, a warm 85 with a trace of precipitation. We were at 70 at midnight. Right now, up one from the overnight low, it is 58 degrees.
We could try to explain what it feels like to get your work done on a John Deere. The way a Z-Track mower finishes in half the time you thought it would. How easily soil gets moved with a 1-Series tractor. Or how it feels to tow up to 4,000 pounds behind a Gator SUV. But if you really want to know what it's like to run with us, you just have to get in the seat.
Visit Hillsboro Equipment in Hillsboro, Boston Equipment in Boston, or Slama's Lawn and Sport in Reedsburg today, or find us online at hillsboroequipment.com.
Hi, this is Teresa Clary with Clary Memorial Funeral Home. With today's rising inflation, now is the perfect time to pre-plan and pre-fund your funeral with coverage from Pekin Insurance through Clary Memorial Funeral Home. Your pre-funded policy, called Pathway, is guaranteed and can be used anywhere in the United States. Call today and protect against future inflation with a Pathway policy from Pekin Insurance. Contact Josh Clary at Clary Memorial Funeral Home for more information.
Sports Time is sponsored by the Homesteader Store, Southern Wisconsin's tractor experts. Coming up, a look at the high school schedule, details on a Brewer loss. They almost got a sweep, but not quite, against the Cardinals.
LS Tractors are a great tractor at a great price. Hi, this is Rick from the Homesteader Store. Let an LS Tractor do all those jobs that need to get done. They make tractors from 21 to 101 horsepower. These excellent tractors have hydrostatic transmissions for ease of use. They come with loaders, 3 points, and PTOs to power any attachments. LS has great long-term financing. I would invite you to our indoor showroom at the Homesteader Store, Highway 14 East Richland Center, or at homesteaderstore.com.
We're getting down to the final couple of weeks of the regular season for high school spring sports. In fact, the postseason will get underway soon for softball teams as early as this week. The WIAA has posted the softball pairings. Richland Center will begin tournament play on Thursday night. Their ninth seed, they'll play at number 8 Westby, with a winner to play number 1 Prairie du Chien in the next round. River Valley has a first round bye and won't play until next Tuesday. They'll face the winner of either Viroqua or Darlington. In Division 4 action coming up this week, games will include Wisconsin Heights hosting Parkview. Boscobel and Riverdale get a first-round bye, and they'll be playing next Tuesday night. Riverdale will play at Boscobel. The Chieftains a 6th seed, and the Bulldogs a number 3. Also in the Division 5 action slated for this coming week and weekend, North Crawford will be playing at Lafarge to open tournament play on Thursday. The winner of that will face number 1 seed Ithaca. The Bulldogs have a first round bye. Kickapoo will play at Brookwood and DeSoto at Hillsboro among the games. Wazika Steuben will be at Judah Albany and Potosi Cassville at Highland. Those games all coming up 1 week from tomorrow night. On today's schedule, Richland Center makes up a game with River Valley in area baseball. That game has been set to start around 4 o'clock today, so an hour earlier than normal. That game rained out this past Thursday, and they set to make it up today. Richland Center softball will take on Dodgeville at home with a 5 o'clock start time. Also, Riverdale softball is slated to play at home against Cuba City today. It's track and field action at Fenimore this afternoon for SWAL teams. The Brewers couldn't hold a 3-run lead Sunday, and that cost them a chance for a series sweep. The St. Louis Cardinals were able to salvage the final game of the series 4-3. Cardinals first baseman Paul Goldschmidt broke out of a 1-for-34 slump with a homer, and then he tied the score in the sixth with a single. Milwaukee had beaten the Cards 8 times in a row. Here is manager Pat Murphy.
You know, it was a 1-run game, but, you know, they left 13 on base. And, You know, we walked too many guys. We didn't execute. I think offensively and pitching and whatever, it just wasn't a great ball game for us. It's hard to beat a major league team four times. Any of these 30 major league teams, it's hard to beat them.
Elsewhere yesterday in baseball, it was a win for the Cubs over the Pirates, 5-4. The Pirates, the next opponent of the Brewers. Pittsburgh will come to American Family Field. Colin Ray will start the game this evening. It was a win for Miami over Philadelphia, 7-6. San Diego shut out the Dodgers, 4-0. San Francisco, 6-5 over Cincinnati. And the Mets beat Atlanta, 4-3. In the American League, Minnesota, 5, Toronto, 1. Cleveland, 7-0 over the White Sox. Houston, 9, Detroit, 3. The Yankees, 10, Tampa Bay, 6. Kansas City, 4-2 over the Angels. Seattle, 8, and Oakland, 4. Interleague play, Boston, 3-2 over Washington. Washington, Arizona 9, and Baltimore 2, Colorado 3-1 over Texas. The Bucs have cut ties with three assistant coaches as head man Doc Rivers sets up his new staff. Milwaukee ended the season with 11 assistants, and Rivers will have a smaller staff. DJ Baker, Sidney Dobner, and Josh Oppenheimer are no longer with the team. Oppenheimer first signed in 2012, then left and returned in 2020. He's said to have a strong relationship with Bucs superstar Giannis Antetokounmpo. Former Bucks coach Mike Budenholzer has a new job. Coach Bud will lead the Phoenix Suns after signing a 5-year contract. And yesterday in the NBA playoffs, Indiana 121, New York 89, and Denver beat Minnesota 115-107. With sports, I'm Phil Neal.
As our morning show continues, in the studio with us now is Marge Freeman, commander of Bauer Gunnell Dalton VFW Post 2267. So we kind of dovetail the information that Todd and Steve just talked about why the memorial event is moved this year. Good morning, Marge. How are you?
Good morning. And I'm really happy to be here and you were able to work us in.
Yeah, and there's a reason why you're moving the program this year and this year only. So there have been a lot of behind-the-scenes reworking right now this year, hasn't there?
There has been. If I may, I just want to maybe mention a little bit about the meaning of Memorial Day, some of the things we encourage people to do, and also items that maybe we should not do. Originally, Memorial Day was called Decoration Day, and it was originally for decorating the graves of flowers, wreaths, and flags. Memorial Day is to honor those who have died while they were serving or died after they served. I encourage people, if you have a flag on your property that the night before or early morning hours before sunrise, put your flag at half staff. And if you are home or if you have somebody else that can raise the flag at noon to full staff, that is a good recommendation to do for Memorial Day in honor of those that served and died during their service or thereafter. Another item would be, you know, for your clothing, wear red, white, and blue. Or attend a parade in your area, attend a Memorial Day service, and if you have a poppy, wear your poppy that day. The poppy is the official flower for wearing on Memorial Day, whether it's a poppy by the American Legion for those when they're out and about, or a poppy by the VFW, which is considered the buddy poppy. Some of the things that I advise people, actually you should not do, you don't wish anybody a happy Memorial Day. This is not Christmas. It's a Memorial Day, which is not founded on promises of a happy new year or anything like that. Don't thank current troops. That is actually reserved for Veterans Day. Don't disregard its importance. Don't forget that Memorial Day actually does exist. It's the last Monday in May, which was designated by Congress many years ago. Don't let politics keep you from rendering respect to those that have served and died during their service or shortly thereafter. It's not a day for politics or other advertising in a parade. So if anybody is in a parade, it is strictly it should be a patriotic parade in memorial of those that have passed.
Tell me about the parade this year and how it's going to change.
Well, we had to change it, and I've been working, actually, I got kind of a notice late February that there was going to be work up at the cemetery on around 8th Street and those locales in that general area. And I've been working very closely with the city police chief and also the leadership, the mayor for the city of Richland Center, on coming up with alternatives. And there was a couple different alternatives we considered, but I was also recommended, well, how about at the Veterans Memorial Pavilion up at the park, at Crosscut Park, which I thought was a great idea. One of the other locations we considered just had a lot of high traffic issues, so this is why we chose the pavilion. And this is for an outdoor service. So with that said, our parade route has changed this year. We will not be at the old high school location. We will be down at Jefferson Street, which will be around the first and second for a parade lineup, first and second, and Jefferson, which would be just below the Jefferson, the old Jefferson School playground in that general area. We will then be, the parade lineup starts at 9:30 a.m., and hoping that the parade kickoff will be approximately 10 a.m. And working with the city police chief, they will make sure the entire Jefferson Street, all the way up to the Veterans Memorial Pavilion in Crosscut Park, will be lined up with no parking signs and so on, so the parade route can go in that direction. Bo Hendricks will be our MC for the day. And then immediately thereafter, we will have our Women's Relief Corps there also up at North Park, which will be about 300 feet to the right of that location. But with that said, that is the intended route, and we highly encourage for those, you know, to be lined up on that parade route on Jefferson Street, headed towards the pavilion at the park, and, you know, to turn out for the parade, and then also show up at Crosscut Park at the Veterans Memorial Pavilion and also be there for the Memorial Day services.
So you're not going downtown with the parade?
No, we are not. Okay. And I'm glad you asked that question, because I did a check on the mileage. Now, if we were at the old high school location going to the cemetery, that's 0.5 miles.
Right.
The exact same distance from the Jefferson School, or actually the Jefferson Street, to the pavilion up at the park is also around a little over 0.5 miles. So for anybody that's marching, the distance is pretty much the same. Our troop carrier should also be available for those that cannot march. So we will do every effort to make sure that's available as well. If we would have started downtown at the post office and then circled around and then come back up through probably Church Street and then down, that would be a very, very, very long distance. And then up to the pavilion, it's almost a mile. It's like 0.8, 0.9 distance, which is a long ways for those that are marching.
With the location then, Marge, you know, you're going to be able to work in the programs, you know, in the park. The water service is nearby then?
Yes, yes. We will start out with obviously, this is all for outdoor service, the welcome of ceremonies. I've been working with Bo Hendricks on that. He will be the master of ceremonies. We will do an invocation by one of our local pastors, which I'll talk about on that later. Then the Pledge of Allegiance. Then the Master of Ceremonies will introduce the Richland Center High School band, Jeff Behrens. I've been working closely with him. Then there will be introduction of the representatives, and basically that would be there's only going to be about three or four that are going to be introduced, and that would also include our guest speaker. There will be also a student then who will be doing the Gettysburg Address, that Jeff Behrens is working with me to get a student name. And then the speaker for the day is designated as Cecil Richardson, who's retired Air Force and He was the Air Force retired chaplain of chaplains. I talked to him briefly, I want to say late February, and I was so glad I had the opportunity to run into him, because I've had a few other people say, oh, you took Cecil away from me. I was like, no, I beat you to it.
He's in demand.
He's in high demand, and I know he travels a lot as well. And then we will also do the closing ceremony and then the benediction. And then we will do the national anthem. And then we will do the salute to our fallen comrades. And we will have the three volleys of firing by our local military honor guard. And then also we will have taps and a moment of silence. Now, after the moment of silence, we will then divert over to near that shelter and that bridge at North Park, about 300 feet from the pavilion, and do the Women's Relief Corps water service in honor and remembrance of those that were lost at sea.
Where's the best place for people to park if they're going to be attending the service then, Marge?
Well, I know there is a small parking area there in North Park. I suppose if anybody can park along the streets up there near the Parks Department garage or any place of that location, or if they're able to walk to that location, that's an opportunity. But also on the other side of North Park, on the bridge up there, there's also a large parking area. There would be a very short walking distance for those that are able to walk. And but we had to go to a different location this year, and it's because of the construction work that's going to take place up at the around the cemetery area. Otherwise it would have been a lot of gyrations and safety for everybody. Safety, and we didn't want anybody getting hurt and making sure that we have a smooth path to the location for our Memorial Day services.
Have you made plans? I even hate to bring it up, but in the case of inclement weather?
We have. There's a lot of moving parts in all of this, and it's not just because of this year. Working with the school and the school district to make sure that the high school gymnasium is available in case of inclement weather. That did happen a few years ago. And usually around 8:00 in the morning is when the final determination is made. Let's say if there's a plan issue or announcements that the weather is not going to be favorable, sometimes that decision is made around 8:00 in the morning, working with the police chief or the school. The school will have everything lined up. They'll have seating available, bleachers and so forth, and they'll be working very closely with the master of ceremonies and anybody that's involved. If the weather is not favorable, we will be at the high school location, which is the same location as when we do our Veterans Day activities there as well. So we had put in for a good weather request many months ago, and I'm hoping that remains that way.
We'll do our best.
Oh, I know you will.
What are some other things going on that you'd like to plug on today from the standpoint of the VFW Post 2267?
Well, there's always something going on at the post level. We are always very, very, very busy. And anybody that has served in what they call a danger zone, imminent danger zone, a combat zone, if you have, please get a hold of us and join our VFW post. We are 105 strong. Even though a lot of people are unable to make it to the meetings, membership is so important, because it's not just at the post level. The decisions that we made, case in point with the state convention, there's a lot of voting that goes on, that goes all the way up to the national convention on legislation and so forth. So it's not just people show up at meetings. A lot of that information for veterans' concerns, all those things are discussed and voted on, or if they're not voted on, those concerns go forward to the state level up to the national level. There's a lot of hard work that's put in by anybody that's in a leadership position. So, but with that said, if anybody has served in a combat zone or an imminent danger zone, you are eligible to join the Veterans of Foreign Wars as long as you have a honorable discharge or a medical discharge.
You like to get some younger members. You're like most organizations,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. And I understand a lot of our young people, for those that served even Desert Storm in Iraq, Afghanistan, a lot of our younger veterans, whether they're men or women, are working full-time jobs, or they got families with young children, and they're being pulled in a lot of directions. Even if you can, you know, join and attend a meeting a couple times a year, and if you cannot be active in the post, that's okay. You can still be a member. Membership is very, very important in any organization because, like I said, you know, a lot of the decisions that are made at the post level carried up to state and national, all that voting constitutes and represents those veterans that are speaking. Our VFW post goes back to 1931 under Bauer Gunnell. And those two individuals lost their lives during their service. And then we were reorganized under a second charter in 1945 under Dalton.
Well, we appreciate all you do, Marge. And we'll be talking to you again, hopefully not about bad weather on Memorial Day, so we can keep it outside at the pavilion then that day.
Thank you so much for your time.
You bet. Marge Freeman, commander of Bauer Gunnell Dalton, VFW Post 2267 on The Morning Show.
The news at 7 is sponsored by Jones Chevrolet, the car and truck people of Southwest Wisconsin, the Richland Family Prescription Center, where your family